Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm Pat Johnston, your host, and I need to play this clip, if you don't mind, from Donald Trump. Well, maybe you will mind, but still, you have to hear this. This was Trump doing some kind of town hall event on Fox News this week, because if Democrats are smart, they will play this clip here on a loop for the next 10 months. Listen.
For 54 years, they were trying to get Roe v. Wade terminated, and I did it, and I'm proud to have done it. They wanted to get it back, right? You wouldn't have that. There would be no question. Nobody else was going to get that done but me.
Yeah.
And we did it.
There. You heard that, right? And I'm not talking about Trump celebrating and bragging about how he got rid of abortion care for millions of women across the United States. No, I'm talking about that lady from the audience who said, yeah, we celebrate that. Yeah, they celebrate the fact that government tells women what they can do and cannot do when it comes to their health care needs. Now, I seem to recall how there were rallies and people pushing senators around at town halls, people berating elected officials all around, all because Democrats were trying to ensure that no one with a pre-existing condition could be denied coverage from our stalwart private insurance scam of a system that we have here in this country. I was told that Obamacare would lead to death panels. You know, speaking of death panels, I follow feminist writer Jessica Valenti on Substack, and she wrote a post highlighting a story in The New Yorker, which I couldn't read without a subscription, but Jessica gave a good synopsis of what was in the story. And it told the story of Yennefer Alvarez Estrada Glick, who died weeks after the right-wing Supreme Court's Dobbs decision, which, of course, overturned Roe v. Wade. The 29-year-old Texas woman was never given the option of getting an abortion due to the abortion ban in that state, and it's an option which could have saved her life. Valenti writes in her post, Yenny would be alive if she was given an abortion, yet this young woman with hypertension, diabetes, and a history of pulmonary edema was never even talked to about ending her pregnancy. Not when she went to the emergency room of a Catholic hospital just 7 weeks into her pregnancy with breathing problems. Not when she visited an affiliated OBGYN who told Yenny that she was at risk of having a heart attack and stroke. Abortion wasn't even mentioned when Yenny was so ill that she had to be transferred to a bigger hospital where records stated that she was at high risk for clinical decompensation / death. As OBGYN Joanne Stone, former president of the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine, told The New Yorker, if she weren't pregnant, she likely wouldn't be dead. And Jessica Valenti makes it clear that The New Yorker reporters make it clear that according to medical experts, Yenny would be alive if she could have had an abortion. Those are your damned death panels. And that's what the right wing wants to bring you. More control over women's health and economic rights. And they want that government control over a woman's body to be federal control. Don't think for a second that the Christian nationalist right-wing movement isn't hoping to make that a reality. All right? Yeah, they always said, oh, let the states decide. No, they want the federal government to decide for all women. We've made some significant strides here in Michigan to ensure that unlike the women in Texas and Florida and other red states, women here have abortion rights enshrined in our state's constitution after voters approved abortion care by a wide margin in 2022. Then, Democrats in the legislature passed the Reproductive Health Act this past year, nullifying trap laws and other roadblocks that Republicans put in place designed to punish women needing to find abortion care. Democratic State Representative Lori Pohutsky, who's also the Associate House Speaker, helped push through some of those abortion rights bills, including the Reproductive Health Act, to Governor Whitmer's desk for a signature, which the governor did indeed sign. Representative Pahuski will be on here in just a few moments to talk about those achievements and others this past year, and if she believes that Democrats in general are doing an effective enough job at messaging how they have actually passed bills that are helping people. I also want to ask her what it's like to pass some bold progressive legislation while the Republican Party doesn't even live in our stratosphere, nor does it really have a party. Or does it have two parties? I have no clue, because I read how Michigan Republicans ousted Christina Caramo as the party chair about a week ago. And, you know, of course, the party is engrossed in debt and incompetence thanks to her leadership. And in fact, I was really hoping that they would just keep her in power. She is gold for the state Democratic Party. Now, Caramo, if you recall, still refused to concede her blowout loss to current Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. So it shouldn't be a surprise that Christina's not going out without a fight here, saying that the vote to oust her was illegitimate. Of course it was. Just like Trump. No matter what, if you lose, it's the deep state. So now Republicans are getting two emails from factions claiming to be the Republican Party. Oh, my. And in fact, there's even another vote happening in Houghton Lake this weekend, I guess, to decide again on who is going to run this party. But the one party's acting chair, Melinda Pigo, told members that the meeting is canceled this weekend due to the big snowstorm that we're forecasted to get here in many parts of Michigan. I mean, those of us in Gratiot County are preparing for a foot of snow. Anyway, Caramo and her people, or that GOP faction, say that this vote, it's on. Oh, yeah, it is on, because whatever the other side is saying, it doesn't matter because they're illegitimate. So you see, everybody, this is what happens when you allow insanity to run the show. I have to tell you, though, that I'm not at all really that interested in the inner nuttiness that is the Republican infighting. Why? Because in the end, they'll just all blame the deep state, the media, black people, gay people, To Kill a Mockingbird, The Lack of a Wall, migrants, Barbie, Taylor Swift, and Bud Light for whatever is hurting their feelings on that given day. But they have no business running anything, especially since they are all supporting the guy who's been indicted 91 times and who used to pal around with a known pedophile like Jeffrey Epstein. Look at Michigan Republican Congressman Lisa McClain this week, okay, if you want to talk about incompetence, as she helped Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene hold up pictures of President Biden's son Hunter Biden's junk in an oversight committee meeting this week. I mean, that's what gets people like Lisa McClain going every day. No, she doesn't have any accomplishments. She's not helping making the lives of her constituents any better. No. That takes governing. No, she doesn't want to do that. She's just all about the show. She's all about talking Hunter Biden and his junk. That's what she cares about. What an absolute embarrassment Lisa McClain is to her constituents and to the entire state of Michigan. Again, these people have no business running anything. But despite all of this incompetence from the Michigan Republican Party, both of them, I'm still a bit queasy over the fact that Donald Trump is still beating Joe Biden in the polls here in our state. According to the Detroit News, a poll conducted by the Michigan-based Glengariff Group from January 2nd through the 6th has the former president beating Biden by 8 points, 47-39% among likely voters in the state. And Politico says other recent state and national polls have found Trump with a similar lead over Biden. In a hypothetical head-to-head, though, against Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, listen to this. Trump's lead did not hold up. He trailed the 52-year-old Governor Whitmer by 4 percentage points, 45-49%. And Politico says the finding underscores the pitfalls for Democrats of fielding an unpopular 81-year-old incumbent president as their nominee. The poll surveyed 600 likely general election voters in Michigan and had a margin of error of 4 percentage points, and it was conducted again by the Detroit News and Michigan station WDIV-TV in Detroit. Now, I've read some comments on Twitter from people that, you know, they try to discount it since it's from the Detroit News, but Glengariff is kind of respected And I've also seen people say, well, it's just 600 likely voters. Well, see, this is statistics. And usually the polls aren't going to go around and asking millions of people. No, they're going to get a sampling and tell you what they see from that sampling, hence the margin of error of 4 percentage points. And in case some have forgotten, this is from the Detroit Free Press back in November. A year out from the 2024 presidential election, a new poll of likely Michigan voters made public on Saturday, now again, this is back in November, showed that former President Donald Trump was leading President Joe Biden in the state 46-41%. The poll done by Epic MRA of Lansing comes on the heels of some other recent polls showing Trump with an edge or tied with Biden in Michigan and other key swing states. A New York Times Siena College poll released earlier in November showed that Trump was leading Biden head-to-head in Michigan 48-43%. So this Detroit News poll is not an outlier. And we have to start really accepting this fact. Now, I've aired my reservations about Biden running again here in 2024. And I will admit, I did recently tweet that, of course, if it comes down to Biden against Trump, I'll vote for Biden to help preserve democracy. But that's just me. I can't speak for everyone out there. And there's something going on here. And despite a stronger economy and the people feeling better about the economy, inflation dropping, lower gas prices, and on and on and on, people here in Michigan are not as excited about Joe Biden as you think they should be. Now, don't get me wrong. The polls showed that there's not much excitement for Trump either here in Michigan. But as we saw in 2016, it only takes a handful of votes to turn around the tide. And when I see how our Governor Whitmer is beating Trump in Michigan in these polls, it makes me even more nervous on whether or not Democrats are doing the right thing by keeping Joe Biden on the ballot. And I'd like to hear from you on whether or not you think that maybe I'm overreacting with these polls showing Trump beating Joe Biden in Michigan. So give me an email. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. All right, I need to take a quick drink of water. I need to make sure that the snowblower batteries are ready to go since apparently we're getting a foot of snow. And after the break, I'll talk with State Representative Lori Pahutsky. You're listening to LOL.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? Leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
Yeah, the best way to continue the conversation with me is emailing me. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. If there's anything you think that I said was wrong, or maybe you thought you heard something I said that was right, or if there's someone in mind that you think I should have on the show as a guest, again, just email me. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Okay, you know, when I first started this podcast about, 5 years ago, the very first political official who agreed to be a guest here on the show was Democratic State Representative Lori Pahutsky. She had been in office for, I believe, only a couple of months by that point, and she was part of that first real surge of progressive Democrats in 2018 who helped shrink the GOP's solid majority in both the State House and Senate. Then, last year, after Democrats took control of the state legislature from Republicans since 1983, Representative Pahutsky and her fellow Democrats helped push through some long overdue common sense policies, including issues on union rights, tax breaks for working families, reinvestments in our schools, actions to combat climate change and cleaner energy, expanded LGBTQ+ rights, abortion rights, voting rights, and so much more. So how will Democrats try to build on those gains? And how will Democrats also in the state legislature continue to show how they are the party of democracy in this pivotal election year? Well, joining me to talk about all those things is none other than Democratic State Representative and Associate House Speaker Lori Pahutsky of the 17th House District. Thank you so much, Representative, for joining me here this week.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Your district has changed. The last time that we talked here, that redistricting committee did some of its work as well. So if you don't mind just letting everybody know real quick here, where exactly is the 17th district in Michigan?
Absolutely. The 17th district is portion of Northeast Livonia, North Redford Township, which is actually where I grew up, and then a portion of Northwest Detroit as well.
Just because I want to make sure that I'm on the same page here. You know, of course, the news broke last week about how these federal judges said that the 13 districts in Michigan had to be redrawn by the Michigan Redistricting Committee. Is your district part of that?
No, my district wasn't named in that suit. I will say that, you know, when you start having to redraw districts, it's safe to assume that some of the surrounding districts will have to change a little bit as well. But we'll see how that goes. But no, my district wasn't named.
What would you have to say that you like the most about your district and the people that you are representing? And maybe you could talk about what you hear from them and the values that they share with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my favorite part of the 17th district is, you know, obviously the Livonia portion is made up of folks that I've represented for my first two terms. I grew up in Redford. I spent a lot of time in that portion of Northwest Detroit as I was growing up. So even though it's changed substantially from the district that I first represented, it's all still kind of familiar. And I know that there were a lot of people who had understandable concerns with how some of these districts shaped up and what it might mean to have a different representative. But my district was so welcoming and so gracious and so involved. Like, they are so interested in hearing what we're working on, and they have questions about it. And the level of investment that they have in their government is really, really refreshing. And I'm so grateful for the constituents that I have. And I think that the way they approach all of what's going on across the state of Michigan actually makes me a much better legislator. And I really appreciate that about them.
You know, back when you won your first race in 2018, I remember when I had you on here, and well, you and I both talked about that Livonia area, especially for your first term there. And growing up in Redford Township myself years ago, I wasn't sure, and maybe this is just my Gen X cynicism that was coming out of me, but I wasn't sure what it would take for a Democrat, let alone a progressive Democrat as yourself, to win in that area. And you mentioned how, you know, first of all, what you wanted to do was just go out and knock on doors and talk with people. That was key. But here you are now, you're serving your third term, and you know, it's got to be more than just knocking on doors why people have gravitated towards you and why they continue to vote you back in. It's also showing them how your principles and how your policies will actually help improve their lives in the end and benefit the entire community, isn't it?
It is. I think those two things actually go together. You know, when we go out and knock doors, because we knock doors in non-election years too. I think that that is a really useful tool that we've certainly utilized my entire time in office, but hasn't always been taken advantage of. It really disarms people. People appreciate that you're there not asking for anything. You're really just there to check up. But that being said, you know, sometimes when I knock on those doors, people are still not happy to see me because they've heard that I voted yes on something, or this policy has been portrayed in the media as something that it's not. So those conversations give me the ability to correct some of that information, or at a bare minimum, explain why I took the vote that I did. And by the end of it, people may not agree with me. They still may have wished that I voted a different way, but they at least have a bit more understanding. And it gives me the ability to break through a lot of the misinformation that we are unfortunately seeing. So it's still, to me, about talking to people, but it's not necessarily because they really enjoy the conversation with me or anything like that. It serves a really useful purpose in breaking through some of the noise out there.
Representative Pusky, one of the reasons that I decided to start this whole podcast in the first place was I was just trying to help progressives and progressive messaging have a platform, which, you know, could be shared around every corner of the state and for others to hear what's happening in Michigan across the country. I did that because during my time in talk radio, Republicans and the right-wing machine had such an effective messaging apparatus wherever I went when I was in radio, be it in Ionia or Lansing or in Saginaw. It just seemed like that they were more prevalent in messaging, at least with media messaging, than the Democrats were at that time. Now, I mentioned all of the good bills that Democrats have passed into law during your first year in the power, but it's one thing to pass bills, but it is another thing to help ensure that voters really truly understand how these bills are actually helping them. For example, like expanding the earned income tax credit or free lunches for all K-12 students. Do you think that Democrats are doing a better job at messaging since you got there a few years ago?
I think we're getting there, but I think that there's still room for improvement. And that's something that we talk about regularly. We are terrible at bragging about ourselves, even when we have a fair amount of good stuff to brag about. So, you know, I think that we are certainly getting there, but we need to be more willing to just lead with here are all the good things that we're doing. And, you know, it's tough because I think about coffee hours and town halls and stuff like that. This isn't always the case, but a lot of times when people come to interact with their government, they're there because they're unhappy about something. So it's important to make sure that people are heard while still also making sure that they do understand that their government is working for them. And there are some really great policies that we've been able to get through after, in some cases, decades of not being able to do so. But there's definitely still room for improvement. And utilizing media to make sure that we're elevating that work is really important and something that we've improved on, but there's definitely room to do better.
What about in terms of reaching younger voters? Do you think Democrats are doing doing a better job at that when it comes in terms of social media?
I think we're getting there. Yeah. You know, social media is a place that I've always felt very comfortable with. I will say it's kind of tough right now because Twitter, I always found to be very, very, very effective.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not now. I might still get a fair amount of interaction, but the comments just drown out. The way that the comments have started going make it significantly less effective. And also, I think fewer people are utilizing Twitter to find news and good information and to interact with their public officials. So, you know, I mean, there are other platforms out there. I'm on Threads. I think Threads is kind of struggling right now, but we'll see where that ends up going. I still do utilize TikTok. Twitter. I try to not read as many of the comments as I used to. And then, you know, I mean, there is TikTok. I know TikTok is kind of controversial. I'm not on it yet, but I think that we're probably moving that way, which that's a platform that certainly has its drawbacks. But if we're talking about going where younger people are, I think that that's something we can't ignore.
Yeah, no, that's right. In fact, I've talked about that here on the podcast. I get the feeling, and while I know that there are some Democrats who have reservations about TikTok and its relationship with the Chinese government, it seems like there are more Republicans really pushing to end TikTok. And I think it's because of how much it's just utilized by especially Gen Z. And I think that they want to try to take away that apparatus so that way Gen Z isn't as connected with everybody, especially when it comes to politics. I don't know what your viewpoint is on that.
I think that's spot on. It's the same as any social media platform. You can find really, really good, useful information. You can also find information that is not accurate and is just bad. But I do think that for the most part, it is a way for, like you said, particularly Gen Z, to get in touch with their government and to learn more about policies and to really, in a lot of cases, get the unfiltered reality of what it looks like in certain areas of the country. You know, I mean, when we look at particularly the fight for abortion rights, TikTok is a really simple way to figure out what it is like for people on the ground in states like Texas and Iowa, and to not have to deal with the government spin on that. And I think that that is very, very threatening for the GOP.
You got in there in 2018. Does it feel like there has been more engagement with younger voters through the year, especially since Roe v. Wade was overturned?
Absolutely. I think that the way that we have approached interacting with all voters has changed. I think that we have been a little bit more willing to just take voters at their word about what they want and stop getting so much in our own way. And I think that abortion is the perfect case study for that. And this is not just me by any means. Like, there are people who have been doing this work for decades before I even considered getting involved in abortion rights activism or much less public policy. But there have been people who have been saying for decades that abortion is a winning issue. People support abortion. And for a very long time, Democrats were not willing to hear that message. And they thought that it was something that we should not talk about. And that, again, goes all the way back to 2018. Like, I was looked at as crazy for putting a Planned Parenthood endorsement on my walklet when I was running in Livonia. And I always thought that that was such a mistake. And turns out it was. It was a winning issue. People support abortion rights. And then certainly after the Dobbs decision, you know, that's a deciding factor for a lot of voters. And then I think the way that we talk about it has changed too. And the way that we try to connect with voters, you know, it doesn't have to be as polished and as overtly political. I think that particularly younger voters really value someone who just talks about an issue directly and honestly and doesn't try to skirt it. And obviously, like, I have the most experience in when it comes to abortion issues, but I think that's the case with all issues. You know, they prefer just to have a direct conversation or to hear a direct statement about something. And I think that that has certainly shifted over the course of my time in office and, you know, even further back than that.
You really pushed hard for the Reproductive Health Act that the governor signed into law just before the end of the year. Was this something you thought would really happen when you first got there in 2018? Did you think that something like this was really possible?
You know, it's weird. It's the policies that were in the Reproductive Health Act are actually primarily the reason I decided to run for office. After 2016, there was a lot of concern all across the country about this, you know, possible patchwork of different state laws. And I was working with a group where we were analyzing all of them. And in a moment of hubris that only someone who has never thought about being involved in politics could say, I was like, well, you know what? I'm just gonna run for office and change some of these laws. And, you know, really quickly, that became clear that that's a very tall order. And, you know, my first term, we introduced the Reproductive Health Act, and it changed since then. There were things that were added. There were obviously things that didn't make it through, unfortunately. But when I first got there, no, I didn't think that we were going to get it through until we had a Democratic majority. My first term, we also, the House voted, I believe the Senate too, it was vetoed ultimately, I believe. The House voted to ban D&E abortions, which are used in cases to save a pregnant person's life, or, you know, in cases of fetal anomaly, or for any other reason that a pregnant person might need them. But that was very early on in my first term. And I think that was a very clear signal to me about what needed to happen for us to advance any of those policies. So it was something that I had always held out hope for. We always made sure that those bills were being worked on so that we would be able to drop them when we needed to, when we knew that we could get them signed into law. But I won't lie, it was a really long road, and there were certainly really dark days where it didn't look like it was ever going to happen.
The parts that didn't get passed, like the, what was it, the 24-hour waiting period, that still is law in Michigan. And then what, there was a part to ensure that abortions could be covered by Medicaid. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
And so those did not go through. Is that something that you'll push for if Democrats are able to increase their majority after the 2024 absolutely. Elections? Yeah,
absolutely. It's absurd that we have a constitutional right that people cannot access because of their income or because of where they live in the state. The Medicaid coverage is just a matter of equity, plain and simple. But the 24-hour waiting period is just cruel, and it is punitive and just misogynistic when it comes down to it. By the time someone is deciding to go through with an abortion, they have thought about it. Those 24 hours have passed. The state requiring that a time-stamped form be signed and brought in, and if it's not time-stamped within the correct 24-hour window that people have to reschedule, all this happening while we are facing a healthcare worker shortage across the board, that includes when it comes to abortion care, and we're seeing more patients out of state because we have hostile states surrounding us, it's not as simple as just come back tomorrow. That may push you out several weeks, which then can make your care more expensive, more difficult. And if you have an underlying health condition, it can put you at risk of losing your life. That 24-hour waiting period is abhorrent. And I have made it no secret that I think the fact that we had one Democrat holding out on that is shameful, and their district is going to suffer for it. And there's no reason for it.
It just doesn't seem to me like the state Republican Party really has gotten the message that Michigan voters want to make sure that women have these rights. And that goes around the country, too, because even in our neighbors down to the south there in Ohio, the people there, they wanted to expand abortion rights, make sure it was enshrined in their constitution. But I've been reading how the Republican majority there is going to try to even overturn that. It doesn't still seem like that Republicans understand how this issue is not helping them at all.
You're exactly right. And I can't figure out why they can't take the hint. You know, and I use hint as kind of jokingly, because to your point, it's overwhelming at this point. States have absolutely taken it into their own hands. They are making very clear statements. They are passing constitutional amendments. They are voting out anti-choice politicians. And the Republican Party just keeps doubling down. Yes, I think that the most egregious case is in Ohio, where they're trying to debate the legitimacy of the amendment. But even here in Michigan, we had a handful of legislators introduce a bill to try and undo the constitutional amendment. It's obviously not going anywhere, and I don't know that they realize it would have to go back on the ballot. But just looking at what happened in 2022 and being so antagonistic towards the will of the voters, it just baffles me. I don't understand it. And I frankly don't understand the end game, because they're just going to keep losing and they're going to keep making themselves unpopular and they're going to keep making this the sole issue that you think about when you think about the Republican Party. And it's a losing battle for them that they just cannot seem to give up.
All right. Well, I just want to move on here because we're running out of time. But I just read a story from the AP saying, and I'm just going to quote here, that Earth last year shattered global annual heat records, flirted with the world's agreed upon warming threshold, and showed more signs of a feverish planet, the European Climate Agency said on Tuesday. So it's obvious that we cannot afford to sit around anymore when it comes to climate change. And while not perfect, Michigan Democrats did pass some climate and clean energy bills last year. What are you most proud of when it comes to those bills? Because I know it's something that you, being a scientist yourself, really wanted to see pass during your time in the state legislature.
It is. And we worked really hard on those bills. In the House, it was floor leader Ayash, Representative Kofia, and myself. Those were tough bills to get through. You know, energy policy is really, really detail heavy. And there's a lot of downstream impacts that you need to consider. I'm proud that we were able to get it done. I'm proud that we were able to get it done in the time frame that we were, because like you said, we're in a crisis at this point. The UP is in their first year of a drought. They've had to cancel a bunch of events that bring in tourists that their economy relies on. This is hitting Michigan very hard in a way that I'm not sure a lot of people appreciate. So what I'm most proud of is, oddly enough, what we got attacked for with that policy, which it is aggressive. You know, I had a lot of Republicans talk about how this is, you know, the most aggressive plan in the country, which isn't necessarily true, but it is aggressive. It is bold. And that's because the situation that we're in right now calls for bold and aggressive responses. And that's exactly what we did. I agree with you. There's stuff in there that I wish wasn't. I wish that there were some things that we had gotten to go a little bit further on. But I think that it meets the moment that we're in. And additionally, it prioritizes things like environmental justice, affordability, to make sure that people aren't being priced out of a clean energy future that we desperately need. And frankly, just to put a few more guardrails in there to make sure that the utility companies can't act as egregiously as they have been. There's certainly more room for improvement on that front. I will be the first one to admit it. But the fact that we were able to incorporate some of those things is something that I'm very, very proud of.
You know, I understand that there are times when it's great to show voters how the legislature isn't completely broken and that bipartisan deals can be reached. And I think that's great when that can happen. But when it comes to climate change and clean energy, for the most part, on these important parts of this legislation, Republicans really did refuse to join Democrats at all on some of the big pieces. And I played a part in an earlier episode, Representative, where you and Democratic State Representative Betsy Cafia were testifying in favor of these bills. And I think his name was a Republican named Representative David Preston from Menominee County in the UP. He was blasting the bills right to your guys' faces, saying that climate change is a theory and that perishable goods would spoil if we transition off fossil fuels. So my question is, how do you deal with that when the other side refuses to acknowledge or even understand basic science evidence? How can there ever really be some kind of partnership together on that? I don't see it.
It's tough. And I think it's very issue dependent. It's legislator dependent. You know, after that committee hearing, I just kind of put Representative Preston in the column of he will not be working with us on this. Understood loud and clear. There were some other legislators who, you know, had concerns about nuclear power or had concerns about, you know, what their co-op electrical operation in their district would look like. And addressing those concerns was important to me, one, because it's good policy. And I don't represent an area that has a co-op or a municipal-owned utility company. So hearing that perspective was really, really important. What is frustrating and disheartening is, despite that bipartisan work, like you said, there wasn't a single Republican vote that went up for any of the main bills. It's frustrating. It's disheartening. it's difficult because, like you said, I think everyone wants to believe in bipartisanship. And I think that people rightfully think that that's how government operates best. And I don't disagree with that. It's just frustrating when you make every attempt to work in a bipartisan manner and people just dig their heels in to be it a conspiracy theory or just a party trope or something like that. That's really frustrating. And I'm not quite sure how we get around it because we can work as hard as we possibly can behind the scenes to get things to a bipartisan place, but it doesn't necessarily mean someone's going to go green on the board. And that's something that we're still trying to work around.
All right. My final question then for you, you know, when you ran in 2018, you ran as the progressive upstart, defeating your Democratic Party establishment candidate or opponent at the time. And then you prevailed in the general election while still touting your progressive ideas. And now here you are, you're part of the Democratic Party House leadership. So I was wondering, you know, Representative Pulaski, how have you changed during those years, or haven't you, or maybe you haven't changed? And what has surprised you the most, or maybe what hasn't surprised you here during your time in the legislature?
You know, I think the biggest thing that I have changed about myself, particularly now that we are in the majority and I am in a position of leadership, I've had to watch the grenades that I choose to lob sometimes. You know, it's not necessarily worth it. It's cool to be funny on Twitter, but the things that I say have a broader impact now. And when I say something off the cuff, the Speaker pro tem of the House of Representatives is saying something, and it's not always clear whether or not I'm just being smart about something or if it's something that people should pay attention to. So I just had to be more cognizant of what I say because I'm a very sarcastic, quippy person, and that is something that I've had to rein in occasionally. In terms of what surprised me, there's been a lot of conversation. I mean, political parties have inner caucus disputes and things like that, and we're not immune from that. But how often that gets framed as progressives versus establishment and, you know, oh, progressives being on the fringe. Because to your point, I ran as a progressive. I've won as a progressive. I am still a progressive. That doesn't mean I get everything I want, even in the majority. But we're taking some really solid steps towards some of the things that I ran on. And we're even getting some of them just done. And that's incredible. So to say that any strife that we have is progressive versus establishment, I think is really unfair and kind of does a disservice to the breadth of people that we have in positions of leadership. You know, we have myself as Speaker Pro Tem. We have Representative Ayash as the majority floor leader. We have some real progressive powerhouses in positions of leadership in the House. And I think that that's really, really important because all of our voices count and we are all able to advocate for the things that we feel are important. And some really good legislation, the climate bills being one of them, has come out of a progressive push towards better policy. And I think that that's really important. And I don't think that the cliche of progressives versus establishment, at least here in Michigan in the House, is profound as people sometimes think it is.
Listen, I just have to tell you, don't worry about what people are commenting on Twitter, because guess what? Some people are just happy being miserable all the time. Let people like me deal with them. You don't have to deal with that. So, but listen, thank you so much for everything. Democratic State Representative Lori Pulaski of Michigan's 17th House District, thanks again for joining me. And thanks for standing up to make Michigan a better place for all. Good luck this year. And, you know, maybe after the election year, sometime next year, you can come back on here. I'd love to have you.
That'd be great. I always love coming on. So thank you for having me. And thank you for all the work that you're doing to help elevate what we're doing.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
I'd like to thank my good friend Rich for all of his hard work on leftoflansing.com. Rich did a remarkable job of getting everything set up so that you can easily navigate the site to read some of my musings throughout the week, get an archive of my episodes, listen to all my Friday Left of Lansing shorts, and so much more. So Rich, thanks for all of your help and for making Left of Lansing what it is and what it will always be. Time now for a Left of Lansing last call. You know, it was great catching up with Representative Pulaski there, and I liked her candor and her answer to my last question regarding, you know, where she said she had to limit some of her clapbacks and quips to some of her detractors since she's now in the leadership. And while I told her not to worry about those people and to let progressive voices like me deal with those clowns, I do have to say that her voice, a voice of sanity, is desperately needed in Lansing right now. And it's great that a voice like hers is in Lansing right now. I have to tell you, everybody, when I was at my very first radio job in Ionia, Michigan, back around 2001, I never thought, and I'm being honest here, yes, there were some good progressive voices in Lansing, but I never thought that we'd have some strong progressives in there like Lori Pohutsky. And same with some of the many other progressive voices from the legislature that I've had on here in the past. What I like most about Representative Pohutsky's politics is that she's intuitive and willing to call them as she sees them. For too long in my lifetime, we've had Democrats fight defensively. It's almost like they are comfortable fighting defensively rather than being on offense. And quite frankly, some Democrats don't know what it's like to be on offense. Representative Pohutsky and many other progressives right now understand the mantra of taking the battle to them. And before I forget, the Lansing media may feel like that they have to talk about a rift in the Democratic Party between the more establishment figures and the progressives, since the entire state Republican Party is absolutely crazy and bonkers and in la-la land at this time. So I get it. They have to also show that, hey, maybe the Dems are in disarray too. And it might be true that there's been disagreements between both factions at times. I've covered those disagreements here, and I have always said that I will more often than not take the progressive side, since I think the progressive side is the more common sense side. But I will repeat this piece that I referenced for you when I interviewed progressive Democratic State Representative Emily Diefendorf last month. It's a story by Kyle Malin of the Lansing City Pulse, and the column is titled, "Historically Liberal State Legislature Has Numbers to Back Up Reputation." Now, Malin starts out by writing, "In their dash to repeal as many Rick Snyder-era policies as possible, the 2023 Democratic-controlled Michigan legislature has earned the most liberal voting record in at least the last 20 years, and there are plenty of numbers to prove it." Now, I'll link to this article on leftoflansing.com, but Malin explains how since 2003, he has collected the state legislature's total votes, and at the end of each year, he gives the bills a ranking of conservative versus liberal bills. Now, maybe there could be some discrepancy between what is considered liberal and conservative, but still, I'll, you know, on the face of it, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt here. He's done the research, so I'm going to continue. And he's been doing this grading system or a bell curve again for the last 19 years. And Malin says, "The average liberal voting record for every Democratic House member for the past 19 years has been around 76%. That's due in part to some Democrats who through the years were a bit more conservative, maybe, or conservative Dems, as I always like to say through the years." Now, Malin continues, and I quote, "This year, however, the average House Democrat voted the liberal position 94.5% of the time on the 49 bills that we tracked, nearly every time. This is 10 percentage points higher than the previous high mark of 84.37% from 2007, coincidentally, the year after Democrats won the majority after another lengthy drought. The lowest liberal ranking among Democrats was that of Representative Karen Whitsett, Democrat of Detroit, at 86%. Outside of Whitsett, no other Democrat had a score lower than 92%. Well, that's no surprise for Representative Whitsett, considering she is the lone Democrat who voted against repealing that draconian 24-hour waiting period for a woman seeking abortion care. And Whitsett also blocked Medicaid funding as a way to help pay for abortion care as part of that Reproductive Health Act, which Democrats passed. And you heard Representative Pohutsky say some rather pointed words towards Whitsett for her opposition in trying to help women. But still, House Democrats voted more progressive as ever before in Michigan this past year. And as Malin correctly notes, the so-called liberal positions, like ending the pension tax or free lunches for school kids or clean energy, clean water, or gun safety laws, all of those bills are smash hits with the voters. And while Representative Pohutsky is indeed right when she says people tend to get more active when they are angry, I think people will get even more angry once they learn how Michigan's Christian nationalist right-wing extremist Republican Party wants to take away those rights from them. That's why Democrats have to do, as Pohutsky said, a better job at bragging over the logical, common-sense steps that they've taken to reverse all of the wrongs that Republicans brought to the state for the past 40 years. But it's also up to us to do the work, too. As nutty as the right wing may appear to us, millions upon millions support their politics. Sitting back and just hoping things will work out in the end doesn't always work out in the end. You think 2016 can't happen again? You really believe Republicans can't gain control of the state legislature again, or the governor's seat again, or the attorney general seat, or the secretary of state seat, or Congress, or even more, the White House again? You know better.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of Left of Lansing. Remember, you can email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Everyone, please be safe this weekend with all the snow that we're getting. And hey, I do have to tell you this, though. I feel like winter is finally here in Michigan. I won't apologize for that because I love the snow. I do. I don't care. Congrats to the Michigan fans and alum of the Maize and Blue for your tremendous national championship run. I know that you're hoping you don't have to wait another 26 years for the next title, so here's hoping that Jimmy stays here a while longer. And good luck to the Detroit Lions, who face their former star quarterback Matthew Stafford and the LA Rams in what should be a rockin' Ford Field on Sunday night. I will predict here that the Lions win a thrilling 38-30 contest, giving the Lions their first playoff win since 1991 when MC Hammer ruled the airwaves. Until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.